Cuckoos. Each town should have a park, or rather a primitive forest of 500 or 1,000 acres, where a stick should never be cut for fuel, a common possession forever for instruction and recreation. Henry David Thoreau. I was back on the marshes where I'd begun my journey almost half a year ago. I liked it out here. A town lay in the distance, its prominent wind turbines turning steadily. I preferred these empty corners of my map, the ignored and forgotten places. I was drawn to their anonymity and the distance they put between me and all the things I should be doing in life, the sorts of things that I imagined everyone else seemed to tolerate or enjoy, but that left me frustrated and wanting to be elsewhere. Perhaps that explained my recent indifference to the orderly suburbs. I felt I was the only one who thought this way, yet I'm sure there are other people on my map also quietly pounding the walls and howling at the moon. But I didn't know any, and I never saw anyone else in these empty places. After the recent sunshine, blustery weather had returned, and I donned thick gloves that I thought I'd put away for the year. I pedalled out through rush hour, slipping past cars hooting their frustration in traffic jams, including a gleaming baby blue Bentley. Cities with enlightened transport planning systems, such as Hong Kong, Zurich or Stockholm, try hard not only to expand public transport access, but also to end the blight of single occupancy vehicles. A hallowed motto of urban mobility planning is that a developed country is not a place where the poor have cars, it's where the rich use public transport. I felt myself decompressing as I rode beyond the traffic into the countryside. The crops were thickening and greening, and I was delighted to hear my first cuckoo call of the year. Cuckoos were once part of the soundtrack to an English summer, but I rarely hear them these days, as three quarters of them have been lost since the 1980s. Cuckoos' habitats have to match the meadow pipits, reed warblers or dunnocks that unwittingly raise the young cuckoos in their nests, so their fate is intertwined with their hosts. Agricultural practices are contributing to the decline of all these species as birds are pushed out of the farmed countryside into what remains of wilder heath areas and uplands. Cuckoos are brood parasitic birds who save themselves the bother of rearing offspring. By sneakily laying eggs in other nests, thus outsourcing all future childcare, they can allocate extra resources to producing more eggs. The host's offspring, meanwhile, have to compete with the imposter baby cuckoo, which even goes as far as trying to evict the host's eggs or to kill their hatchlings. The host mother may be only a tenth of the size of the young cuckoo, but the gargantuan cuckoo chick remorselessly demands food from her. Nature seems cruel, but she balances her books far better than we do. I passed through a kissing gate and admired an old timber barn set on mushroom-shaped staddle stones to raise stores off the ground and protect them from mice and damp. Disappointingly, kissing gates don't derive their name from romance, but because the hinged gate kisses both sides of the enclosure. This hasn't stopped the tradition of requesting a kiss from the person who follows you through the gate. As usual, however, I was by myself, so I just hoisted my bike overhead, in a muscular way that would no doubt have driven any companion to kiss me, and then passed through the gate to the marsh on my own. Marshlands are one of our most endangered landscapes. They are at risk from rising sea levels and could begin to disappear within the next 20 years. As well as global warming, they're also threatened because they're low-lying and accessible, and therefore tantalising for development. Besides their own intrinsic value, salt marshes protect against erosion and flooding, and their complex ecosystems are important for nature. I followed a chalky, bumpy track across the marsh between two reed-lined drainage ditches. A reed warbler, recently arrived from Africa, burbed its lively song. I couldn't spot it in the undergrowth, but my trusty Merlin app identified its song. Reed warblers weave immaculate, basket-like nests that are suspended and concealed in the reeds. Even so, they are not safe from cuckoos, and 10% of reed warbler nests each spring are home to an impostor. Fortunately, because warblers raise multiple clutches of eggs each year, cuckoos are not too damaging to their overall populations. A heron descended like a paraglider, drifting for about 200 metres without flapping its wings, then braking hard and landing beside a flooded ditch to survey the landscape with its haughty, atavistic gaze. I stood still and watched it while a ship on the distant estuary appeared to drift past a field of cows. A lark sang overhead, and I eased into the sedate pace of marsh life. I passed a fence post covered in bird droppings, a useful lookout spot for a marsh harrier on this low, open terrain. They too nest in these reed beds and hunt for frogs, mammals, and small birds. Their courtship involves remarkable aerial displays, with couples locking talons in the air as they tumble from great heights. Marsh harriers were once very endangered, but their numbers are increasing again thanks to habitat restoration, the banning of certain pesticides, and a clampdown on illegal shooting and egg collection. The footpath continued through a docile herd of silky Hereford cows. They are the product of systematic breeding practices begun by Benjamin Tompkin in Herefordshire way back in 1742. All 5 million pedigree Herefords today are descendants of a single bull, the son of a cow named Silver, and two cows called Pigeon and Mottle. They are now one of the most widespread breeds in the world. "Good morning, ladies," I called out, though they mostly ignored me and kept munching the grass. "Don't be moody. Would you like to be in my book? The stakes are high, but I'll milk it for all I'm worth. Are you not amused?" And so on. The disused canal I had sat by on my first outing sliced across the marsh. Its construction had begun back in 1800 with great fanfare, but the era of the railway arrived before the canal was completed, rendering it instantly obsolete. The canal opened 25 years after work began, coming in at 11 times over budget, making it perhaps almost as farcical an idea as HS2, and it was never particularly commercially useful. Today, the towpath is a peaceful conduit for joggers and cyclists, and its overgrown waters are home to populations of moorhens, frogs, Lucozade bottles, and deflated birthday balloons. I zipped cheerfully along the towpath, now part of Sustrans' national cycle network that was established to encourage us all to ride and walk more. Launched with a £42.5 million national lottery grant, the National Cycle Network is now used for more than 786 million cycling and walking trips per year on 12,739 miles of signed routes, of which 5,220 miles are traffic-free paths like this one. A pair of feisty reed warblers almost crashed into my bike while I was riding at speed. They were busy squabbling or courting on the wing and paid scant attention to the giant human on his beloved blue bicycle. In a vivid split second, I watched a bird fan open its wings, slam on the brakes, Top Gun style, and veer away from my spinning spokes just in time. It was glorious out here today. Spring was in full cry, a season that comes along slowly, slowly, then all at once. I was in a country that cared, to a greater degree than most nations, about encouraging cycling and walking. I had heard my first cuckoo of the year, and I had chatted with some cows. What more could I ask?